Mister.
Hello, WGN listening audience.
Live from the biggest small town in America, it's the Saturday Night Special with Amy Goof.
WGN. With International Women's Day just mere days away, coming up on March 8th, and Women's Month already underway as February became March, we're talking about the role that women hold in our workplaces, our music, our movies, our lives, and our world. Tonight's show, though, it's not a women's show. It's an everybody's show, because as more conversations have continued to arise about workplace and pay gap issues, and as more women are running for office than ever before, and more conversations about boundaries are entering our everyday lives, plenty of men are stepping into these tricky conversations too. Because look, the gender-based issues in our world at the moment aren't women's to fix. They're going to need all of us, all in, to figure it all out. But indeed, it's perhaps a little bit different conversation today than it would have been, say, a year and a half ago. With the rise of Me Too and the subsequent Time's Up campaigns to call out discriminatory and harassing behavior, there's suddenly a larger cultural awareness and a sense of space and safety to say, look, enough is enough. Suddenly, there's renewed momentum around issues like reproductive health care and access, equal pay, representation in boardrooms and big screens, and the necessity of reconciling the lean-ins and the Me Toos and the, well, been there and done that's. Because let us not forget that the current women's movement is not new, and plenty of women and men have put in huge efforts for sometimes merely an inch towards progress. But we all know the issues, or we try to anyway. The question really is, what are we going to do about it? So tonight, we're going to take a look at how that conversation and those leaps are going in several different areas. We'll talk with the president of Public Narrative, a Chicago-based media literacy organization, to talk about the stories we tell and how they shape us, and how and why she co-founded Association for Women Journalists Chicago 25 years ago this year. We'll talk with the director of the Women's Leadership Program at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, with the CEO of YWCA Metropolitan Chicago, about her organization's mission to empower and support women at every stage. And then we'll hear from Women of the Now, a women's filmmaking collective that seeks to amplify the voices of women in cinema. That's all coming up tonight on the Saturday Night Special on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us. Always grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday evening with me. Well, tonight, ahead of International Women's Day on March the 8th, we are talking all about women tonight. But as I said in the opening monologue, this is not a women's show. This is an everybody's show. Indeed, I think we can agree that there's a lot of topics right now around gender. So we are going to sort through some of them tonight. Of course, we always close the show with more questions than we started with. But we do try to take a look at many, many topics and pull in very, very smart people to talk about them with us. And our first guest is one of those very smart people. We're joined by phone by Susie Schultz, who is the president of Public Narrative and has held many, many fascinating roles around Chicago, and including one that is very significant this year in particular, because she co-founded Association for Women Journalists in 1993. And this is the 25th anniversary of that. Welcome to the program, Susie. So glad to have you.
Well, thank you, Madam President. It's wonderful to talk to you, too. You forgot to mention that you are president.
I'm getting to that part for sure. Right. Right. Well, I have to admit, the first time I met you, I was a little bit kind of fangirl about the whole thing. So I was like, wow, I'm on the board of this, and she founded this, and it was kind of a cool moment. But I want to start with Public Narrative, and then I want to go to AWJ a little bit. And so if you could, please, tell us a little bit about the mission of Public Narrative as it relates to women and sort of narratives in the media around women.
Of course. I love this organization. It was originally founded like 30 years ago as a community media workshop, and I took it over about 4 years ago. And, we essentially do a little bit more, but kind of the same thing. What we really want to do is a very simple mission. We want to change the public narrative on racism, sexism, and xenophobia. So that's our goal. And to do that, we work with people who are in nonprofits, working in the community. Our mission is to really elevate voices of people of color and women. So really a majority of the people we work with are women. 63% are people of color. And we teach them not just because these people that I meet are amazing and they have great stories. And so we teach them not only how to tell that story in their way, but then also how to tell it in a way that maybe another audience would hear. Because sometimes the real roadblock here is that we're just not hearing one another. So, and the other thing we do is we teach journalists, because journalists, you know, hold up that First Amendment, and they are so important, and they're so busy. So we want them to be able to tell the stories of Chicago and its neighborhoods and the issues that it faces in a deeper, better way. So we train them in, about all sorts of different things, communications, mostly in social media and on topics, and then we bring the two groups together in programming so that they can meet each other and know who are the experts on the issues of housing, who are the experts on the issues of mental health, people that perhaps the journalists might not have enough time to meet because they're so busy, and also the nonprofit people are so busy. Mm-hmm. So we try to get them a moment in time where they can understand so we can, again, make a richer narrative for everybody.
And what are you finding when, you know, so much of what you do really relates to kind of tackling and dismantling these dominant narratives and making us think a little deeper about them? What are the ones that you think are most maybe pervasive or problematic right now for women?
Well, for women, it's still, there's those three, really, racism, sexism, and xenophobia. Women in Chicago are affected by all of those, not just sexism, but deeply racism and xenophobia. And what we see is people are also depending on who they are, people are reluctant to speak up, especially women. You know, women are heads of households in the Latino community. Women are heads of households in the Muslim community. And these are immigrant communities that are, you know, they're not only immigrant communities. Many of these people are people who live here and have lived here their whole life. But the issue of the executive orders and what we've seen on DACA coming from the White House have really quieted people. They're afraid. They're really afraid. We worked with, thanks to Pillars Fund, we worked with a group that was predominantly women running Muslim organizations to help them feel good about it, help them really know what to say to the media when they're called so that they can tell the stories of what's going on in the neighborhood, because I don't think we know how organized people are getting as well as how afraid they are. Mm-hmm. No matter what population you're talking about, but really it lands so much more on women's shoulders because we do hold up those households, don't we?
Yeah, right. And so how do you even begin to troubleshoot that in the current political climate?
Well, you know, one step at a time, right?
Mm-hmm.
it's like we do with everything. We looked at it kind of strategically and saw where is it that we could have the most effect? Who are the people that really need this? Who are the people who need training? Who are the people that journalists need to meet? And so we targeted those communities and those people and those organizations so that we could be, in some ways, legmen or women for the journalists working in the city. So somebody calls me and says, listen, I'm on deadline. I'm working on this story. I need to talk to some people who are dealing with mental health issues. I need to talk to somebody about the renewal of the ADA. We keep a storehouse of lists of people we've trained, people we've talked with, people whose work we know. And then the other thing that we really try to do is we want to make sure that the communities here in Chicago are also healing. We're under a lot of stress, not just because of what is going on in Washington, but really because of what's going on in Springfield. If you're talking about our budget woes, you're really talking about it falling on the backs of all of the social service, all the social service agencies in the city of Chicago. We've lost a lot of domestic violence shelters. We've lost a lot of basic care. And so that then falls really on a lot of the women in the neighborhoods to help. That's always been the role that we stepped up to fill. So so we really tried to target those people who, again, are holding up their communities and make sure they feel comfortable talking and make sure journalists know exactly who it is who's mobilizing and in action.
Right. And so then looking at journalists, you know, as you founded AWJ in 1993,
Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
Because there was five of us.
There was, yes, co-founder.
Shel Stevens, Cindy Richards, Mary Galligan, and Adrian Drell, and myself.
Yes.
Cindy Richards and I did a lot of heavy lifting, without those, that group of five, you know, Cindy will also always tell me that, you know, we as women always have to thank everybody too much, but but it's true. I can't say anything about the founding of AWJ without talking about them and without talking about JAWS, which is mm-hmm. a national women's journalism organization, Journalism and Women's Symposium. And they welcomed us to meet there and to give us resources so that we could form and come back and bring the same sense of a JAWS, a national group, to Chicago, the local Chicago group.
Well, it's exactly that group that I want to ask you about, because as you reflect and think to when AWJ was first founded and that initial group, what were the issues on your mind at that moment, and how much progress do you think has been made on them?
You know, I've never been somebody to be really negative about things. Mm-hmm. I always think that we are where we are and we're going to keep moving forward. No matter what, we're just going to keep at it. The issues of sexism and racism, see, all of the things that we're dealing with are pernicious. And they didn't happen overnight, and they're taking a lot of time. And from my mind, I wish that we have made much more progress. The issues, I remember the first meeting we had, Mary Dudinsky, who was the editor of the Sun-Times and then had moved over to Northwestern, opened up Northwestern. Cindy was about 8.5 months pregnant, and all of us stood there at Northwestern. About 120 women showed up, and 65 of them gave us checks when we said, we really don't know what we're going to do. And part of that had to do was that we all felt almost the same urgency that we're seeing in the Me Too movement. The same urgency of we can't live this way. We can't live in the environments that we're in. I had sometimes as a union shop, so I was in the union leadership. So I was always brought in for issues that had to do with women, and they were just horrific. They were the same at the Tribune. Women stood up that first meeting. It became a little bit of a testify meeting, which was what we needed. And they talked about sexual harassment. They talked about not being able to juggle both careers because the office wouldn't allow them, being a mother and being a reporter. They had no place for, there was a fight even to get a place to pump breast milk at the Tribune. And all of these things that just wear at you as a woman that you have to deal. And if you're a woman of color, you know, it's compounded. So I am thrilled at the fact that the Me Too movement has sparked people listening and people actually hearing and moving to action. I wish it had happened sooner, but I'm thrilled that it happened now. And I'm really hopeful that some of these systemic changes that we need to make will not just turn around and there'll be backlash about men saying, I can't even talk to somebody in a workplace without worrying about committing some crime, mm-hmm. which is some of what we're hearing now. But I'm seeing young women and even older women finally allowed to tell a story of what they endured, because they stick with us in the fiber of our being, right? And feeling a little bit freer, feeling more of who they are, feeling more as though they have a place. AWJ was, when people talked about, people actually called me as the Me Too movement was beginning to make headlines and said, is this happening in journalism? No,
like,
we are very different from society. We are very different.
Right.
So, and we've seen the headlines, too, of our industry. And it's no different than here in Chicago. It's just perhaps that some of these cases haven't made headlines, and they probably won't, mm-hmm. because many of the women who were involved won't speak up. They're still scarred from being told basically get back to work and do your job.
Right, right. There's so much to this, and I wish we could stay on the phone for another hour. I feel like there's so much to unpack and dig up here and talk through, but indeed, you have given us a lot to think about. And as you think about the year ahead, and I realize I'm asking you to kind of speculate, but what is your guess and perhaps hope for where the strength of and the momentum of Me Too leads us next?
So the strength and momentum of Me Too, plus we have the Parkland teenagers and all sorts of things that we feel that there's people saying, we can't take these things anymore. We can't take these things anymore. We need to live in a better place and a better society. We deserve more. And so I really see that these things aren't going to go away. They're going to people who are going to keep at it. We who are older are going to keep supporting. And what I also see in Chicago, especially in the journalism world, is these amazing young women with these strong voices. They have so much to say. I look over at City Bureau, see Bettina Chang and Andrea Hart, and see all these other women who are a new generation. And it just makes me want to be reading more and listening more because they have great stories to tell. So I think this is going to be a really interesting year in Chicago in particular with journalism as well as with women.
Hear, hear. I like it. Susie Schultz, president of Public Narrative, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
All right, we are going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff, back here in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us. Always grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday evening with me. Well, as ever, we take one big topic and we talk about it all evening and unpack it and usually leave with more questions and answers, but that's okay. We're here to discuss and think and consider. And tonight, ahead of International Women's Day on March 8th, we're talking all about women and issues and stuff, because that is a topic we have been talking a lot about lately, especially in the last year or so. And so we have assembled many wonderful guests to talk with us about that this evening. And we are joined right now by Ellen Tafe, who is the director of the Women's Leadership Program at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. Say that three times fast. Ellen, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here, Amy.
Well, so let's start with the program that you direct, the Women's Leadership Program at Kellogg. Tell us a little bit about that and kind of where your focus specifically is right now there.
Sure. Well, we know that in undergrad programs, about 50% of the students are women. But we see as they get to the C-suite or at senior levels, there's a severe drop-off. And we know that women drop off at a couple different stages. We identify them as pivot points, the launch phase early on in a woman's career in her 20s, early 30s, as she's really setting a foundation. The mid-career, a lot of times, which is accompanied by caregiving and a lots of juggling and challenges at work and at home, and then transition into senior leadership, where we're really trying to equip women to make that move to the highest level. Now, my focus is primarily on the launch, where women are coming back into business school. In our full-time program, they're on average age 28. And many times they're here to elevate their career, change their focus perhaps, and we're really helping them to figure out what they want to do and help them to thrive in their career. We're providing programming that really helps them to figure out what they want and to do their best as far as creating a leadership, as far as their presence, being able to ask effectively, create influence, and really make a mark in developing their career and creating a life of impact and meaning, as
yeah.
we say.
No small task.
Yes,
right there.
I know.
Mostly you're talking then about people who maybe have been working for a few years and are thinking, you know what, I'm going to go back and get my MBA.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go there and just up the game a little bit.
Definitely.
That's the group.
Yeah, yeah. So that's in our full-time program. In our executive MBA program, that is women who are more advanced in their career, yet they want to come back to, again, elevate their career. And we do programming across both with our students, but then also with our alumni who come back for all kinds of executive education or come back for a reunion. Mm-hmm. We have an inaugural Global Women's Summit that I'm one of the co-chairs of that we're very excited about. We're doing that in May. And that's really about convening and networking and really being a catalyst for advancing women.
I don't have an MBA, but I want to go to that. I hope that's okay.
You and so many alumni and students.
Right.
Fortunately, it will be live streamed. And so we'll have events across the globe, actually.
That'll be cool.
To watch parties as well as being able to watch individually.
So we can find out.
So I'll get you the link.
Okay. We'll just keep an eye on the Kellogg website. That sounds very cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this, say, year and a half, maybe, in particular, we've had so many conversations. There's so much energy around workplace issues and gender and all of that. How are you seeing that manifest in your work at the school?
Well, obviously, the Me Too movement has been a big part of the conversation. And it's both something that's quite exciting in the sense that women are being heard and taken seriously. It's also been an area of big shock and, you know, raising awareness of that kind of an awakening. And I think what's exciting about it is that the ground is shifting, and both women and men in our program, as well as alumni or other people, I would say for sure, in my network are really trying to figure out, what does this mean? What do we do? How do we operate in this environment? So it's both empowering and it's also kind of scary. I think a lot of men are trying to figure out, what do I do? You know, of course, there's the more egregious examples, but
sure,
there's lots of men trying to figure out, how do I handle conversations? Have I complimented someone, and is it getting interpreted in a way that is, you know, I'm at risk? So it's quite a change in the environment.
Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah.
I imagine. And so what advice would you have for leaders who are maybe trying to shift culture right now around that and kind of respond thoughtfully to that ground shaking?
Yeah. Well, I think that it's about listening to people in your environment, that the team, it's making it a priority to make sure that you're working or you're leading in an environment that everyone has a fair shot. And obviously, if someone feels that the environment is hostile or they're being harassed or facing really tough situations, they're not going to feel safe in that environment. And it's a real call to action to assess the bias that is a big contributor to other areas that hurt women's advancement. So, you know, from a leadership perspective, I think it's making it a priority. It's getting training, bias training, sexual harassment training. It's really looking at policies and making sure they are robust and strong. And most importantly, is it being practiced? And, you know, does it reflect the values of the company? Does it reflect your values? And, you know, the culture is really about delivering on those values. And
right,
when someone conflicts with that or goes against it, are you holding them accountable? So as a leader, that's really what you need to be able to do. And it's not so easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not so easy. I think it's this awakening. It's a major reflection individually as well as organizationally to assess, you know, did we not say anything mm-hmm. when someone was the sales superstar? And what's really shifting is the penalty, I think, in the past has been on the woman, mm-hmm. on the whistleblower. And many times she was exited or sidelined or marginalized. And now that is likely shifting.
Yeah, yeah. You brought up a really interesting point there. And that was one, I think, that gets overlooked a lot, is that you can have policies and employee handbooks and rules all day, but does the culture recognize them and support them. I think that's so very key, because that can be in your employee handbook all day long. But if you're not going to, if you're just going to get a slap on the wrist for doing something egregious, well, that's going to be a problem, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you really, as a leader, need to know, is it working?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how do you know that? Because especially if you're at the senior level, it's not so much that you're always going to know. And so, you know, are there culture surveys? In some ways, if people are reporting harassment, that in some ways it's a good thing that people are feeling like they can do that.
That's a good point.
And there's many environments, even in, you know, big companies, and you may have a lot of MBAs, but you really want to look across your company, especially in environments where women are more in the minority and the power imbalance is so strong, whether that's at a plant or in many industries, that is the situation. And that's also an indication where you could even have more risk.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Ellen Tafe, director of the Women's Leadership Program at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, all about this topic of women in the workplace. There's a lot here, but we still have lots to get to. So we're going to take a little break, come back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us this evening. As always, thank you for sharing part of your Saturday night with me. So tonight, ahead of International Women's Day on March the 8th, and of course, March itself is Women's Month. So we are talking all about women tonight on the program, because as ever, we take one topic and talk about it all evening. And right now, we're talking specifically about workplace issues. That has been a very, very big one, if you have seen any headline ever in the last year and a half. Very big topic right now. And so we're joined by Ellen Tafe, who is the director of the Women's Leadership Program at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, talking about that. So, Ellen, you've written a lot about this topic too, and you approach it, women and workplace issues, from a really interesting place, because not only are you leading this program training future leaders, but you yourself have been a leader of very large companies and done some very, very big things there with some brands I'm sure most people would recognize: PepsiCo, Royal Caribbean, Whirlpool, to name a few. So with that, you have a really, you know, I think a really unique perspective to speak to these things, because it's not just in theory. You've been there and done that, and you know, you can speak to this in that way. So you wrote a piece recently that was in Garnet News. It's called What Will Good Men Do? And it's a topic you kind of broached a little bit before the commercial break, about how men are kind of struggling a little bit to, you know, of course, there's the egregious examples on extremes, right? But most men, the swath of men in the middle, I think there's some degree of, you know, kind of reconciling this moment that we're in of how can I be an ally, or at the very least not get reported to HR? How can I not screw up at the very least? And this piece really explores that. So where did you first get the thought to write this piece, and how did it come about?
I actually was meeting with a group of people, and one of the men in the meeting, who I am, you know, friendly with, collegial with, and we give each other a hug when we see each other, he said, "I don't think I can hug you anymore." Mm. And in humor, to kind of lighten up the situation. But he honestly did look like, "Oh, what do I say to Ellen?"
Yeah.
And in that moment, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, if he's feeling this way, this very senior guy who I've worked with for 8 years, if he's feeling that way, other people must be feeling it. And, you know, I wrote this back in November, but I've continued to see it and hear it from people. And while there's certainly so many men who are also figuring out what can I do and organizing meetings and really taking a more proactive role, there's certainly a lot of men who feel like they need to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit of a puzzler to me, because there's a part of it that is, I have to protect myself. Why is that? You know,
right.
Do you think you're going to...
Guilty conscience.
You know, are you feeling like you've done something wrong, right, in the past? Or there's any other thing going on here. But I think it's just a protective instinct. And of course, Vice President Mike Pence has shared his rule. And I guess the thing is, you know, you can do what you want, but if you treat men and women differently and you don't have meetings in your office in a closed door with women, you need to not do that with men, too. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, it is discrimination.
Sure.
And so, you know, it's that would be one of the downsides of the Me Too movement if there is new behaviors created out of protection and some sort of concern that limit women's careers.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting that you mentioned Mike Pence, that right after that happened, where he was, you know, that thing came out about him not mm-hmm. dining with women alone, a lot of men, even men that didn't support him politically, you could see this on social media, a lot of men were going, you know, I didn't vote for the guy, but I think he's got a point. I tend not to do that. And it created an interesting conversation of women mm-hmm. saying, well, but then I'm not getting opportunities if you're going to be chummy with my male coworker.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So I think that is a really interesting point. So what advice would you have for workplace issue for men who are trying to kind of negotiate how to move forward and how to just be, you know, coexist with coworkers there?
You know, I would treat those situations and treat men and women fairly. And so if I did feel personally like I have a rule that I don't want to have dinner with a woman, I better make sure I'm not having a
right.
dinner with a man.
I have no dinner with any employees.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, you know, and if it's an extended relationship where it's you're taking the male clients out, you want to make sure you're including women in that mix or not doing it, or can you bring your spouse or something like that. So mm-hmm. you just don't want to limit opportunities. And you know, another idea is that you do some things in groups. So whether or do it in more of a public venue. I can remember when I worked at Quaker Oats that the CEO would meet with people who were, you know, high potential people, and he met with them in an open forum for breakfast, and you always knew that's who Bob Morrison was having breakfast with.
Right.
But it was an open thing, and no right. one ever thought it was anything other than the scuttlebutt of, is that person going to get promoted?
Right.
And it was men and women at different times.
That's a yeah. great choice that
yeah.
like
yeah.
no one can speculate about what occurred.
Yeah.
It's right
yeah.
here in front
and
of everybody.
And it was just never, ever talked about, like, because yeah. there was nothing wrong.
Yeah. And so let's rewind a bit to the women that are entering the program. They're going to pursue an MBA. A lot of the women that you're working with at your in your program, and what advice do you have for them? I think, you know, I think it was very interesting how you outlined a couple of key points in women's careers where we see a lot of drop off. For the women that are maybe earlier career where you see this drop off, I think you called it the launch stage.
Yes.
What advice would you have for them right now in the middle of this movement where I think it, not just men, I think it leaves a lot of people kind of unsure of what to do.
Mm-hmm. My biggest advice would be to go big and bold in your career.
Mm-hmm.
The earlier you can set a foundation and get the right training and really know the function you're in understand if you like it, but also really build your skills, your credibility, your reputation, and your network. The earlier you can do that, that will serve you well as you face more challenging times, especially if you have children and have, you know, a lot of other competing demands on your time. I would also say that in my career, having had P&L responsibility, profit and loss responsibility, and having had the experience of managing brands and businesses from a financial perspective was really critical to upward mobility. And what we see from some of the studies like the Lean In McKinsey study that is updated each year, you see that as women progress in their career, a lot of times whether it's by choice or what happens within the organization, there's less P&L management, also called line management. And as they get to the C-suite or the higher levels in an organization, they look at someone and say, have they run a business? Mm. Not just, did they do the advertising from a brand management perspective or that type of thing.
So, not just about how many people were they supervising. But
yeah, so you really want to see what are those, if what you aspire to is a more senior level, then you want to see what are those critical experiences and how do you get there, assuming that's what you want.
Mm-hmm. You talked about that very topic a little bit. You were quoted in Forbes a little while back. On this very topic about going forth and trying to get P&L responsibility. But you also said something that I thought was really interesting, and that was really about representation and the importance of younger women seeing more senior women in their organization. Even if it's a subconscious cue, it kind of seems like it speaks to, okay, I can do that. She's there, I can get there.
Absolutely. If I can see it, I can be it. And it's harder when you don't see women at senior levels. And so the more, you know, for younger women, the more they can hear those stories, see them in their organization, they have more optimism that they can get there too. I think women believe that they want those leadership positions, and they believe they can do it. They don't always think it's going to happen for them when they don't see women in those levels. I mean, some of the programming we do at Kellogg is also to expose women to all these amazing female leaders. I just did a field trip with 15 women to go see 3 female founders in Chicago on Wednesday.
Cool.
And it was just an amazing kind of thing. So, you know, if you don't have it within your organization, even finding it, whether it's, there's so much written about great female leaders, and a lot of times they've had, you know, a non-traditional path to get there, certainly some traditional. And so find those ways of seeing, of getting inspired and seeing those leaders. But first, I wish they were in the organization to really
start
that it can happen here. Yeah.
Right. Start with A.
Yes,
move to B.
Absolutely. Plan B.
Right. And so I realize that I'm kind of asking you to speculate a little bit, but if you were to, you know, everything going on right now, all the issues we're wrestling with around workplace and gender, if you were to sort of look maybe a year ahead, what is maybe your hope and guess of where we're going to be or of what progress we will have made in about the next year or so?
Well, I feel like this truly is the year of the women. There have been many that have been proclaimed before, and part of that is what I see in, I mean, we have the social media platform, Me Too movement. I really think it's changing things. I think there's a reaction to the election as well. And so I really do believe that we'll see changes in women getting elected to office, women striving for more leadership positions. And I would also see, as much as there's so much bad behavior out there, most men are really good. And there's so much great things I'm seeing. I see the young people also making a difference, and they're going to demand a difference. So, you know, if all the, I see businesses start to take all the innovation that they put into products and making driverless cars and things like that, why can't we begin to redesign the systems and the way the workplace operates that was really designed for a, you know, one income white male?
Right.
And so I think we have the start of big things here.
I couldn't agree more. I like it. And you're the expert, so we're going to say yes, you've declared it for sure. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ellen Tafe, Director of the Women's Leadership Program at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Amy.
All right. We're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. We are talking all about women tonight because International Women's Day is upon us on March 8th, so that's just days away, and March is Women's Month, and we're talking about that. But as I said at the top of the show, this is not a women's show just because we're talking about women. It's an everybody show because I think we can agree, at least I hope we can agree, that many of the issues that we've been talking about, especially the big issues that we've been wrestling with for the last year or so, are everybody issues. They're not just women's issues to solve. They're everyone's issue to be all in on and all of us to step in and help solve. So we have, you, as usual, gathered many very smart people to talk about different aspects of this topic. And so our next guest is Dori McWhorter, who's the CEO of YWCA Metropolitan Chicago and regular contributor to this program. Hi, Dori. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show and this station. I feel like we have you on all times of the station sometimes. So to begin, if you would, please talk to us a little bit about YWCA and the mission that you have and the focus around women.
Absolutely. So the YWCA, we are 140 years old in Chicago, and our mission is quite lofty. It's to eliminate racism and empower women. Actually, our full mission statement is, in addition to eliminating racism and empowering women, is to promote peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all people. So I totally agree with your earlier comments that Women's History Month, we're talking about women, but it's actually about all people.
Right, right. I think that's in crafting my remarks to open the show with, I really wanted to make a point to say that, because I think sometimes when we talk about a topic that's maybe women in the workplace or women's reproductive rights or something like that, I think sometimes we position it or it gets positioned anyway, like it's women's to solve. But no, it's everybody. It's everybody's responsibility to kind of fix all the things.
Absolutely. And the reality of it is that if it's done right, it truly does benefit everyone. You know, there's a story that I learned years ago that said that it was a woman who was sitting in a meeting with an oil company that said, you know, it's hard for me to take care of my kid and go pay to the gas station, in the gas station. So that's how I heard that pay at the pump got started. So I'm like, absolutely, that would have to have come from a woman's perspective. So I think when we focus on women and really try to solve the challenges that we face as women, it absolutely becomes a benefit to everyone.
I love that story. That's so interesting. So 140 years that YWCA yeah. has been in Chicago, and no doubt there have been many different initiatives and campaigns that have spoken to different moments that we're in. But in the last year or two, where things really feel like there's a groundswell of momentum going on, and a lot of women are having conversations that, and men too, a lot of people are having conversations that we haven't been having for a while or at all. How is that manifesting in the work that you do in your organization?
You know, it's interesting because while the public hasn't been having these conversations, the YWCA absolutely has had them and has been having them for some time. But what our role now is to really leverage the momentum of these conversations and recognizing that while we've been providing sexual assault support services for decades, literally for like 50 years, now the public is becoming more aware that this issue hasn't gone away. And when we're looking at economic empowerment opportunities, I think the public is just becoming way aware that equal pay is a real thing. And we've been focused on this for some time. So we hope that people, since it's now in their consciousness and they're more aware of it, that they will absolutely partner with us and help us resolve these issues even faster.
Well, there's so many programs that you do. I mean, if anyone wants to head to the website, which I will tweet out after the program, and of course, we'll put it up on the WGN Radio website afterwards with the podcast. There are just so many projects that you have going. And what I think is so interesting is it seems that there is support from the jump. I mean, even for very young girls, there's programs that really seems like it's aimed at helping young girls get a head start on things. And it seems like there's nurturing at every point.
Absolutely, because we like to talk about helping our girls or future women as early as we can to get focused. For specifically with our Tech Girls program, we're looking at how we can get girls focused in science, technology, engineering, arts, and math very early so that they gain confidence in those fields and are ready to really take on the opportunities as they see them. So we do that. Another thing that we do, we provide sexual assault support services and counseling for very young ages. actually starting at 3 years old. And so I just think that our approach to supporting kids very early in the process so that we can help them navigate challenges as they come. We actually, in addition to that, do a lot of work in the early childhood education space as well. So again, from making sure that children are not only being nurtured, but actually receiving the educational requirements so that they can stay on track to pursue their educational path and be successful there. So we are literally trying to impact women at every phase, including the early childhood phase.
And so how early do you begin these conversations with, I love future women. I love how you said that. how young can you start having these conversations about some of these big issues with young girls without it being kind of overwhelming and scary to them?
Well, I think it's important in terms of how parenting, for example, when you think of parents, I think it's important to reinforce the concepts of confidence and even boundaries as it relates to sort of good touch, bad touch, those types of things. So I think it's important that with the work that we do that we recognize where kids are and sort of their maturity evolution. And so we make sure that we're delivering content, whether we're in school, because we literally are delivering sexual assault prevention content as early as 5 years old.
Wow. Wow, that's a shame that that's needed, but I know that it is.
Well, I think it's important that all children understand boundaries and that what's there in their body is their body and those important concepts. And we hope that they grow and have healthy and appropriate relationships as well.
Right, right. Well, we're going to have to take a break here in a second, and I really
sure.
want to talk about the work that you are doing around wage equality. There's so much effort around that at YWCA that is so wonderful. But before we go to break, I want to make sure we talk about an event that's coming up, because you're going to be there and I'm going to be there, and that is the New Look of Leadership.
So the New Look of Leadership, we're very excited about that event. That we hold that as one of our celebrations during Women's History Month, and really to highlight leaders that we know are carving new paths, using their voice like you, Amy. So we had to ask you to be one of our fabulous models this year. We actually, it's interesting, we have Mary D modeling as well. So while she's not new, we love how Mary D just continues to stay relevant and really represents women and how and wonderful and empowering we can be at all ages and stages of our life. So Mary D will be modeling with us. We also have City Clerk Anna Valencia to show how women in public office are taking on leadership, as well as amazing entrepreneurs like Dr. Sonat Bernecker, who is the president of Koval Liquor. So I'm sure you've seen some of their billboards around town. So we just have a wonderful, diverse lineup of women and a few special men that we feel really represent this new look of leadership and folks that are really standing for women's empowerment.
And that's going to be Sunday, March 25th at Macy's on State Street. That's 111 North State. That's 11:30 to 2. So it's an afternoon thing. You won't be out late. It'll be all good. So you can go to YWCA Metropolitan Chicago's website and look at that. Or again, I'll be sure and tweet it out. If you follow me on Twitter, you're going to hear a lot about this in the next few weeks as we gear up for that. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking with Dori McWhorter, CEO of Metropolitan Chicago YWCA. When we return, we're going to be talking about YWCA's campaign for wage equality by 2020. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. Grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday with us. So, as ever, we pick one big topic and talk about it for the whole program. And tonight's topic is women. But as I said at the top of the show, it's not a show for women. It's a show for everybody. We're just talking about women in the workplace and all the conversations that we've been having, especially in the last year or so. There's change in the air. So we have been talking about that with some very, very smart people. And we have Dori McWhorter on the phone with us. She's CEO of Metropolitan Chicago YWCA. And we have been talking about some of the programs and campaigns that YWCA Chicago does. And Dori, I want to talk now a little bit about the program, the Wage Equality by 2020 initiative.
Mm-hmm.
At YWCA. That's a big undertaking, but it's there's so many resources on the website, and there's so much activity around it. It seems, I mean, it's a good goal. We want to get there. Is 2020, I mean, it's right around the corner. It's right there. Can we do it?
Well, I believe we can. First of all, this is America. We can do anything that we focus on, first of all. Second of all, the reason, you know, it's interesting that you called out the 2020, people challenge us on that. They're like, well, you lose credibility because it won't be done by 2020. And we're just like, but why not? If we take the pressure off, if we say, oh, you have till 2035 to get this right, then we'll be talking about wage parity in 2035.
Mm-hmm. So I totally agree.
So we just said, let's put 2020 there. It's the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage. And if we haven't done anything over the last 100 years outside of getting women to vote, we should at least have achieved wage equality and really, really be provocative by using 2020 to remind people that, yes, it is right around the corner. But it's also, as we say, it's not that complicated. Just do it. It's really not that complicated. So we've dedicated our campaign to achieve wage equality by 2020, and we call it Not That Complicated. And so we give explicit instructions for people to achieve this on our website at ywbcachicago.org/ not that complicated.
I love that. And I've seen you use that hashtag on social media, not that complicated. I love it.
Because it's not.
Because it's not. And I think
it's really not.
I think about a year, maybe a year and a half ago, we were on the program and we were talking about this. And I think you said something like, look, we can put somebody on the moon, but we can't pay people the same. Come on.
Absolutely. You know, I follow SpaceX on Twitter, and every day they get closer to putting someone in Mars, actually on Mars, to landing on Mars. And I'm just like, this is ridiculous. I met the CEO of SpaceX, and I asked her, which I was amazed, but I asked her, how long will it take? And at that time, this has been a few years ago now, she's like, oh, it's about 20 years. It's not that complicated. We just have to build an atmosphere. Mm. And I'm like, if it's not that complicated to build an atmosphere, clearly it's not that complicated to achieve wage equality.
Right.
That's my thinking. Maybe I'm wrong.
Right. Maybe we're oversimplifying it here, but it seems like if you can build an atmosphere on Mars, perhaps wage equality could be easy enough. Well, we're about to run out of time, but I feel like we could do a whole show just on that. What is your advice to leaders specifically on that topic of wage equality? Because I agree, and I do like that that you have that hard deadline, because you're right. When we say it's 20, 30 years out, it seems like, oh, we'll never get there. But 2020, you're like, okay, let's do this. We got a lot to do.
And make people think about really what it takes. Because what I want to see is people put steps into practice, or actually to action. One of the basic things you can do is simply do a salary audit. Really understand for your organization, what is the disparity between men and women, and understand the reasons why. That's the first step. And it's really easy to start that process. And then understand what steps can you put in place to begin to narrow that gap, whether it's once you really understand what's driving the gap, it could just be that managers aren't just aware of what they're doing, quite honestly, and they may have some bias built in there. But whatever it is, I am so confident in our people to believe in our leaders to know that we can close that gap. I just think it has to be a priority and a focus.
If we're just a few years away from an atmosphere on Mars, surely we can figure this out. I like your perspective. Dori McWhorter, CEO of YWCA Metropolitan Chicago, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having, and I'll see you on March 25th.
Yes, and there will be info about that event up on the website at WGNradio.com and on social media if you follow me there. All right, thanks so much, Dori.
Take care. Thanks, Amy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all the good stuff, back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
35 at the lakefront. Get Chicago news first at the top of every hour. I'm David Jennings on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. As usual, we take one big topic and start unpacking it and looking at it from a lot of different angles. And tonight, that topic is women, because March 8th is International Women's Day and March is Women's History Month. And so we are taking a look at this topic, and especially because in the last, let's say, year or so, there's been a lot of change and a lot of conversations about workplace and harassment and all kinds of things. So there's, you know, changes in the air. So we've been talking about that. And so we have been talking with a lot of people all evening, but I'm not the only one thinking about that topic right now. Esteemed producer Tom Hush also hosts a podcast on WGN Plus called No Coast Cinema that he co-hosts with Connor Cornelius. And they were talking earlier today with a women's film collective called Women of the Now. And it's all about elevating the voices of women in film right here in Chicago. And they had a conversation earlier that I would like to share with you. Let's take a listen.
We're talking with a fantastic collective called Women of the Now, founded in Philly, but they are now based in Chicago, specialize in video and event production. They're creating content with female-driven narratives, and they're featuring strong, complex female characters. Joining us today, we have Lane Marie, Nandi, and Steph from Women of the Now. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you guys for having us. Hi.
So you have a event coming up on March 25th. It's the anniversary showcase for Women of the Now. Like I said, March 25th, 3 to 6 p.m., $10 a ticket over at the New 400 Theater, 6746 North Sheridan. Congratulations on a full year. That is huge.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're pretty excited, to say the least. It's been a long time coming. So,
yeah, absolutely. Especially with an organization that is featuring what we know is an underrepresented group, which is female and female identifying people. It's somewhat of a, it's a revolutionary act to say, hey, we're going to do this specifically and feature not just characters in our work that are female or female identifying with strong, complex characteristics, but also trying to, and I really like what you said in the about page of your Facebook, nourish those kind of content creators. So if you could tell us a little bit about yourselves and what your role is within Women of the Now.
Yeah, so I'm Lane Marie Williams, so I'm the founder and executive director of Women of the Now. I also co-founded the Women's Film Festival in Philadelphia. So in a lot of ways, Women of the Now is like my love letter to the Women's Film Festival. We're actually about to have our fourth year. So March 15th through the 24th, we'll have the Women's Film Festival, and then Women of the Now is having its event March 25th. So because it's, you know, Women's History Month, it's definitely always the busiest month of the year for me. So lots of women, lots of film, all that good stuff.
I'm Nandi Mudiwa. I'm the Director of Events and Educational Outreach here with Women of the Now in Chicago. I've been with us for a year now. And in film production, I am a wardrobe stylist.
I'm Steph McDonald. I'm the director of media and marketing for Women of the Now, and I've been working in film production for the past 3 or so years and with Women of the Now since we started a year ago, and do a little bit of social media, a little bit of doing our events and stuff like that, and a little bit of cinematography and art department work.
Tell us a little bit about how Women of the Now came together. You said that it's founded in Philly but based here in Chicago. What's the history there?
So during the first Women's Film Festival, which took place March of 2015, the group of artists that I was working with at the time, when we were just kind of running around shooting films, very like guerrilla style, which was kind of like my intro into filmmaking, we called ourselves Women of the Now. And actually, I realized this is actually kind of cool, and I need to go back and look at this film. But we made this like documentary style mythological narrative short film about sexual assault while I was living in Philly and before I moved here. And one of the main characters in it was a man of color, and he played like a pretty pivotal role within the film. And within the Stonebirds, there were like interview portions that were all real and authentic perspectives about sexual assault. And when he did his interview towards the very end of the film, he talked about his sister and like living in a world where he was nervous about like the health of his sister, and he said women of the now, so he actually coined it, and then we just continued to say it like all the time. We would just be like women of the now, hashtag women of the now. And then when I moved to Chicago, it just came with me, and I wasn't really sure how yet. And I actually went through a phase where I was like, is this like inclusive enough? Is this a production company? Is this like, what is this? And I remember like having a very specific conversation with, two of the women that I was working with in Philly at the time while living here. And I was like, should I keep this name? And they were like, yeah. Keep it. Do something with it.
Tell us about, you know, being in Chicago for that extended period of time. How have you seen things change, not just in the world of film and media, but also Chicago itself? I mean, Chicago of 6 years ago, strangely, it feels like such a short period of time, but I feel like a lot has changed.
Yeah, Chicago's definitely grown a lot artistically. I think now that is kind of the main focus of like why people are paying attention to Chicago and why it's become the new kind of like mecca of film production and like music and so many different things, where so many TV shows are coming to Chicago, because a lot of people are seeing Chicago for like what it is and seeing that it has like a pretty dynamic like groups of people that live here. Really, it's just very different from like when you go to one part of Chicago to another. Like you can come to the downtown area and see like all of this like beautiful architecture, or you can go to like other areas of Chicago and see different types of people that live down there. And it's just interesting that a lot of TV shows right now are like trying to portray Chicago, and there's like a lot of just film production happening all over the place. It's really like boomed a lot in the past, I'd say like year or two, as opposed to when we all started like 4 or so years ago here.
So it's a pretty fruitful place at the moment. Like, how does it feel? I feel like you guys have been putting in an investment at this point. It's coming to fruition. How does that feel to know that you've been putting in the work and now finally it's being recognized as a film city, a media city, an art city, as you said?
It feels really great. I mean, I feel like there's so many of us that have seen Chicago for what it is for so long. Like, there's so many of us that grew up here and knew that there's so many really, like, really, really talented artists that live here and, like, work out of here and are so focused on, like, just making sure people know that Chicago is more than like what the news portrays it to be, because everybody sees Chicago as being like a very violent city and stuff like that. But there's also just so many amazing artists that come out of here. And I think that's something that the media is really picking up on, and that a lot of people are coming to Chicago for. Like, people are leaving places like LA and New York to come to Chicago because it's the great middle ground, that it's like not as crazy busy as New York and LA. It's kind of like the nice in between, where there's just as much work, but the people here are a lot friendlier, and it's a lot easier to find work and get to know people, and it's on like more personable level.
And it's still a relatively young notion, this idea of Chicago as an emerging film mecca, as you said. But there's always been these ingrained long-term art communities whose goals have always been to, you know, support the people who live here. And so how have you guys been supporting that idea of a long-term goal to support one another through your art?
I would say that we all really just try to support each other in our like own endeavors, like whether it's something like showing up to our friends' screenings or crewing up people for a passion project that one of us have. We just always will try to support each other, support our friends that are throwing events that are like benefit events or events for like their organizations and things like that. I just think it's really, really important to give back to people that are trying to give back to the community, because you need to show them that support in order to hopefully get that support also for Women of the Now.
Yeah, I think it's digging deep into our communities and like recirculating the like good opportunities that come our way, and like making sure that we're always uplifting each other, instead of like as soon as a great opportunity or resource comes, we like outsource it or like toss it to someone else that hasn't been working alongside us for as long, you know, putting in the hours and time and dedication.
Yeah, I think like at our core, I mean, we're all like the three of us and then the other six women that we work with. We're filmmakers and artists in our own right. And so we're constantly trying to make content and share that content and like Steph and Nandi mentioned, you know, crew up any opportunities with one another. And I mean, filmmaking is a very collaborative process. You cannot, I mean, you can do it alone, but like, it's tough. So I think like by nurturing our own careers and elevating one another's careers, that also is focused into the bigger picture of just kind of trying to figure out like how can we make content but also give back to the community and, you know, elevate those filmmakers as well. So, you know, hence like things like the showcase. Yes, it's our 1 year anniversary and we're like super excited about that, but also let's give a platform to these filmmakers so that they can see their movies on a big screen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about that collaborative process and the creative process for Women of the Now. I was curious, what is that process of bringing on creators and filmmakers into this collective? How does the production process go? And then from there, how does the distribution or exhibition of it go from there?
I'd say we've been pretty event focused ever since we started. It's been like a process of fundraising for a short film, Scott Lee, that we are going to like crew up our entire Women of the Now friends and all of our like colleagues and stuff like that for, which is pretty exciting. But we have been super event focused for the past year and trying to make these like really awesome events, like with the film festival or like with our launch party and things like that.
Yeah, I think so. We kind of are the director of production on our board, Laura Day. So she and I had a meeting sometime like before we all got together before our launch party, and we talked about Scott Lee, this short film that we're already in pre-pro for. We've been in pre-pro for a while. It takes time to raise money. And you know, I sat across from her at a table and we were like talking about like how we were going to make Scott Lee happen. And she said to me, "We need to make Women of the Now happen. Like we need to have some networking events and get some awesome press. And then from there, I think we'll be able to like raise the money so that we can make this film." So we kind of went into it with this intention to, you know, have these different kinds of events. Like I refer to our first year as the year of experimentation because we did everything. I mean, we had a burlesque show. We had, bar nights, camera workshops, a mythological themed event. I mean, we just did a lot of different stuff and we raised money and we lost money and we like learned some really hard lessons and we learned how to work together and how not to work together. And then finally, like we're in a place now where we've totally got our funding for Scott Lee, but it took, you know, a year. I mean, we just got our full budget. We've just been kind of through a variety of different kinds of events and like, you know, happenstance, like meeting people and being like, "Oh, you're a filmmaker too. What do you like to do? Oh, you like to art direct? Okay, cool. Like come into one of our meetings. Let's like hang out and figure out where to put you and, you know, submit your film and we're having this camera." So it's all been like very interconnected and it's been really exciting.
You've been listening to a conversation that show producer, esteemed producer, Tom Hush had on his show that he does for WGN Plus. It's called No Coast Cinema. And tonight's topic is all about women and especially all the change in the air and the conversations we've been having in the last year. And so today, earlier on his show, he had this conversation with a women's film collective called Women of the Now. So we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to hear part two of that conversation here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Tonight, we've been talking all about women because International Women's Day is upon us on March 8th. But you know what? I'm not the only one thinking about that. Esteemed producer Tom Hush talked with Women of the Now, which is a women's film collective, earlier today on his podcast that he hosts on WGN Plus called No Coast Cinema, which you should all check out. So we've been listening to that before the break. Let's listen to part two of that conversation now.
I was reading a little bit about one of the events that you guys put on in 2017, Rise of the Fempire.
Yes.
And it does totally seem to me it's like a great encapsulation of that. Host these unique events, and unique is the key word in there, because you were bringing these people out, and what you could have done was just put up a screen and shown a movie and then had like a case of cheap beer there, you know? You could have done that. But what you guys did was you had terror readings, you had carnival games, you had fire eaters, you had these signature cocktails brewed for the event, and it was all towards your goal of, you know, empowering women and women-identifying people. What has the community response been to these, I don't want to say attempts, but these creative...
Endeavors?
There's another word, but that'll work. That'll work.
It's been very positive. Everyone, when they arrive into like a space we've curated, it's been like mesmerization and just like awe. And we always receive really supportive feedback. People talk about how much they enjoy our parties and like our events and like when our next one's going to be. And we're like, oh, we're going to take a breather. It's a lot. But it's been super supportive.
I think people do recognize the amount of effort that we have put into our events because we know we've been to so many different film networking events and stuff like that, and we didn't want it to just be a bar where you just like network with people and hand out business cards and stuff like that. We just have such a great community of people that build like art installations, and we have such a great community of people, like people that read tarot, bartenders, just like a little bit of everything, that we wanted to encapsulate, like, this is our community, we want to show you like what we are all about. And I think that's definitely what our first event did for us, and I think it showed people that we're serious and that we are more than just like a little group of gals just getting a bar together and selling tickets to our opening event.
Yeah, I want to stand out for
yeah.
sure.
I always joke like, this is not a sorority. This is a business.
One of the most important things I think about Women of the Now that I read in the mission statement was the focus on intersectionality, which is very much a topic that more and more people are becoming aware of. However, some people still are not able to wrap their heads around it, or they don't kind of get where it's coming from. Can you all tell us about Women of the Now's approach to inclusivity and intersectionality?
Take your time.
We're all just looking at each other like,
it is a big topic.
Who's gonna take this
one? It's a big topic.
Yeah, I just want to like a second to think about it.
Sure. Well, I'll say this. In a interview with the Chicago Reader, Lane Marie, you said the Women's Film Festival in Philly was inherently intersectional, and that Chicago, you felt that you had to be more intentional with Women of the Now in terms of making sure that it was inclusive and also intersectional. Why? Can you tell me about why you felt that way, and does Chicago need to work on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I'm a person that has always surrounded myself with an intersectional environment. Like, that's just how I'd live my life always. So when the Women's Film Festival and Women of the Now came to be, it was just like, well, duh, like, of course, you know? And I think, like, as a white woman, like, as a cis white woman, I can definitely recognize that my voice in a lot of ways, like, while it is important and it does matter, like, I'm also just one perspective. And that's not, you know, that's not, rich enough. That's not like plentiful enough. So, you know, how do we add to that? And so I think, yeah, in Chicago, in a lot of ways we have had to be intentional. Just even like, you know, we've been doing some interviews for some positions lately on the board, and we've had to, you know, have conversations like, you know, let's make sure that we also try to find a woman of color for this. And one of the questions I know that we've asked during those interviews is the very question you just asked us, is like, what's your impression of intersectionality? And does it matter to you? Because if not, then like, this is not the crew for you. And so, yeah, I think with the Women's Film Festival, you know, I had lived there for 5 years and like, you know, was constantly surrounded by artists. And I just had more time to kind of like make it so. And here, like, I was like the new girl on the block. I like showed up and was like, I made a movie. And then, you know, people like Nandi and Steph, we were just kind of like drawn to one another. But we have had to be intentional in moments, just with making sure that people's hearts are in the right place about that. Like, I think there are a lot of white women in the world that don't understand like what feminism really is. And so that's something I've had to like keep my eye on as like the you know, the leader of this whole thing. It's like, how do I not police other people, but also like keep an eye on their intentions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my perspective working with the group, like, we are a very diverse board and we have a lot of different backgrounds and stories and experiences, but just like striving to make sure that Black and brown women know that we are a resource to them, because a lot of feminist groups that feature a lot of white women kind of not push away, but like they don't necessarily draw in people of color, and it's like, well, that's not for us, so I'm not going to really reach out or go to their events, or like, mm-hmm. I don't think that they support me the way I need in feminism. And that's been like my driving force, is to make sure that women of color know that we are there for them too, and that we want to support their work and uplift their art as well.
You've been listening to a conversation that esteemed producer Tom Hush had on his podcast, No Coast Cinema. You can find that at WGN Plus. He was talking with the people behind Women of the Now, a women's film collective. As part of our show tonight, we were talking all about women, because there's a lot of change in the air. There's a lot of conversations being had. And as usual, we have only but scratched the surface. But hopefully we've been thinking and talking, and maybe we'll continue to spark some conversation. So we're going to take a break, get you to news, all that good stuff. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you are an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn.